And welcome to Clacks Women for Indie Podcast, episode 11. Well, what a week we've had. We've been out on the range, we've been east, we've been west. And for that reason, this week's music has a western theme, and it's from Mr. Snooze. We're going to start this week, as we often do, the Beaumont Community Centre in Alloa. This week we were joined by John Nicholson, who is the SNP candidate for Ochil and South Perthshire, hoping to unseat our Tory incumbent. And here he is talking to roving reporter Lynn.
So I'm here at the Beaumont Centre with John Nicholson, our SNP Westminster candidate. So,
hello.
John, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. We've just had a great meeting with the Women for Independence. And it's a cross-party group, isn't it? Because we've got Greens, we've got people who are not members of any party, and we've got SNP people, but all of them want to see independence for Scotland, and all of them know that the only way we're going to protect ourselves and protect our National Health Service and protect ourselves against Tory cuts is to vote for independence.
Exactly, yeah. Well, we're very much...
You agree with me?
I do agree.
Well, there's a surprise.
It is a surprise. And that's one of the things I really like about the group, is that although there are different party members,
yes,
and non-members, that we've all got the one aim, and that is independence. And what's great about this constituency, Green have had the foresight to say, well, we're not going to stand here, we're not going to take any potential
votes. Yes, I'm pleased about that, because the first past the post system means that all that a Green candidate would do, and I've lots of time for the Greens, but what the Greens would do, sadly, would be to divide the pro-independence vote. And the Tory MP here has got a very small majority. It's a 3,000 vote majority, so we need to go out and we need to vote if we're to beat him. And I think we will beat him, but it's the SNP candidate, it's me, who's the only person who can beat him, because the Lib Dems, Labour Party, Greens, none of them will come close enough to beat him.
Yep. How have you found so far? You've been out canvassing. I believe you were out in Dollar yesterday.
Out in Dollar yesterday, been out in Crieff, been out in Comrie, been in the north of the constituency, been all over the constituency. And, well, you know, candidates always say this. They always say, I get a great reception in the doorsteps. And I'm looking at some of the Labour candidates saying this on Twitter. And it can't be true, because we know they're on 12% in the polls, so it's obviously nonsense, wee souls. In my case, it really is true. We're getting a remarkable reaction on the doorsteps. I went in Dollar yesterday through a whole housing estate where every single person who came to the door told me that they were voting SNP, every single one. And we're getting people who are coming from the Labour Party to vote SNP because they know that we're the only party that can win here and beat the Tories. But I was also getting Tories who said that they were going to vote for the SNP because they were so angry about Brexit and the effect that Brexit was going to have. And these are people who listened in 2014 when they were told that the only way of staying in the European Union was to vote against independence. And Tory members here, Tory voters here, are very anti-Brexit because they know it would be devastating for some of our big food manufacturers and producers here, because we'd be swamped with cheap imports and it'd be bad for prices, and we know that the hospitals are stockpiling drugs. It's Brexit chaos. And Tory voters, you know, centrist Tory voters who've always voted Tory, are saying we don't want this Brexit nonsense, and I can tell you they all really can't abide Boris Johnson.
Oh, I think, well, he doesn't do anything for Scotland. What we've seen on the news, when I do bother to watch the news, is it just appears that Scotland's inconsequential.
Well, we all saw that during the course of these Brexit negotiations, because Ireland, tiny Ireland, was getting the support of all the 27 members of the European Union. You know, the German Chancellor, the French President, flying into Dublin to ask the Irish Taoiseach what the views of Ireland were. Compare and contrast with the way that Scotland has been sidelined and ignored in the course of these Brexit negotiations. You're not getting the Prime Minister phoning up Nicola Sturgeon to ask her views. And it's a long way from what we were promised in NDRF 1. Lead us, don't leave us, remember that? Union of equals? What a load of baloney.
And I think it's a very, as you say, it's very interesting that the people that are moving to vote for SNP for a whole host of reasons. There's no one reason that people are saying, right, we need to vote SNP. For me, one of the biggest things is protecting our NHS.
Yes.
It's critical. I've got friends in the States who have advised me, fight with every fibre in your being to ensure that you keep your NHS, because it's so enviable to have a system like that where you know that you can go get a doctor's appointment, you can get medication. And people will say to me, I've had friends down south who say, oh, you're subsidy junkies, you don't pay for your prescriptions. And my answer is always, no, we do. We pay for it through our taxes, and our government has chosen to spend the money that way so that everybody benefits.
Yes,
from
I'd rather free prescriptions than Trident nuclear missiles. I went to university in the States, and then I worked in American politics for a while, and I have the most terrible memory of working in the United States Senate for Senator Moynihan, who was my boss. And we had a constituent who needed a transplant. He needed a transplant in order to survive, and time was running out. The organ was available, and we had, I can't remember how many hours, a couple of days, I think it was 48 hours or something from memory, to raise the funds to pay for the operation, because the organ was available, but it was a question of paying for the operation, and we failed to raise the funds, and the man died. Can you imagine that happening in a civilized country? And that's what happened. And I was given the job as a young Senate staffer of trying to raise the fundraising, and I had this most terrible sense of hopelessness because I'd failed to raise the vast amount of money that was required in a very short amount of time.
And I think people that live in Scotland don't necessarily see why it's so good, how it's so good, because they've never experienced anything else. So they just assume that
everywhere's like that.
And then when they're told that actually you're failing, when they see, oh, the Scottish NHS is failing because Boris says that and he's going to take back control of our NHS, they believe that.
My mum's got dementia, recently diagnosed, and she's doing fine, but she wants to stay in her house. And she gets, through the Scottish government, 4 daily visits by carers, 1 hour for each visit. And I tell my friends in England about this, and I'm of an age now where a lot of my friends, the parents are beginning to have dementia, and I tell my friends about it, and they literally cannot believe the level of care and quality of care, because of course they're having to sell their houses and put their parents into homes. My mum's desperate to stay in her own house, and she's doing fine and feels quite well, mostly. Mm-hmm. And but it's because she's got this care that she's able to stay.
And I suppose when we're talking about NHS, lots of workers in the NHS have come from EU nations. But lots of people are being put off because of the
90%. There's been a 90% drop-off rate in applications from European Union countries to come here to work in the nursing sector, because they just assume that they don't have a long-term future. Mm-hmm. We can't run an NHS without nurses coming in from abroad. And everybody who's been in hospital recently or visited folk in hospital knows how many people from the European Union work there. But look, the key to this election in seats like Auckland South Perthshire is please, please, please go out and vote. Don't assume that we're going to beat the Tories. Don't assume that the SNP is doing well and therefore we're going to win these seats back, because we know the Tories are very good at getting out the vote. They're very good at raising money. They're going to flood the constituency with very expensive leaflets paid for by private donors. We have got to raise funds, tramp the streets, knock at the doors, and on December the 12th, we've got to get our vote out if we want to get rid of the Tories and defend our National Health Service and the other things we care so much about.
Excellent. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
It's been lovely talking to you.
A pleasure.
See you on the campaign trail.
The next really exciting thing that happened to us this week is that Marion and I were guests on Indie Live Radio's live show in Glasgow. And what a fun morning that was. We absolutely loved it. Brilliant to sit there with Kevin and Val and Ian from Yes Stones and just chat. Indie Live Radio. We record things and we're out and about, sitting in trains and have conversations.
That's really interesting because I've got a microphone, but you reckon that the phone on its own is just as good?
Every bit as good. Voice memo, I think it's called, on my phone, which is an iPhone. No brands are pushing there, but it's easy.
Yeah. Mine's it's voice recorder in tools on the Samsung, and you just press it. The difference with the phone is you get a lot of background, and At first we were trying to avoid that, but actually, if you're in a march or something, that's where the energy comes from.
That's true. Mm-hmm. It makes it more atmospheric, really, doesn't it?
And we had a Yes in the Community event in Alloa, and that was the first time that we'd actually had a lot of background noise, and I was thinking, oh, this is terrible, how do I edit it out? And you can't edit it out.
Yeah.
And actually, we thought, we like this.
Yeah. I love it as well. That's Mackinac style. Mm-hmm. Gorilla.
And people are much more sort of at ease talking in that sort of, it's like informal, rather than sitting, you know, sort of head to head and with a microphone up, you know, your nose like this sort of thing.
It can be a bit intimidating, can't it?
Yeah. But people soon forget there's a mic on, you know, some sort of recording device, and off they go on one of their special sort of journeys to tell you what's been happening to them. So it's very enriching and
fantastic. Yeah. I love that. I love that. You know, it's about getting information out there, isn't it?
Well, you've noticed, Fiona, how the clicks have been going up and how many people have actually downloaded or listened to the podcast. So you are aware that the reach is there, and we're actually making that leap to broaden out our audience.
I think we've got a way to go before we're up in the top 3,000 podcasts. But it's
not always about numbers. Right. All you need to is to reach one person, touch one person.
Yeah.
Right. You know, good on you. And I'll tell you what, we've got podcast experts here now, haven't we? But we want to encourage people, don't we, to get involved.
Can I just remind anyone that's listening that the Clark's Women for Indie podcast goes out at 10 a.m. on Tuesdays and again at 6 p.m. on Thursdays here on Indie Live Radio.
You can download the recording afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always log into the chat room as well for the Tuesday one, and sometimes people come on and they're chatting about what we're covering on the podcast, or sometimes it's just me and Steve sitting there and having a natter about things.
You mentioned voter registration. How did you get on with that?
We got a big bundle of voter registration information and the actual form that you fill out if you've never done it before, and we handed them out at Alloa railway station and Asda between times as well, so just people coming off the trains in the evening after their working day, and we handed them out to folk there.
Yeah, and the Beaumar as well. We left a huge stack at the Beaumar actually, because that's kind of the demographic I think that we need to reach.
There's one woman outside Asda who said, "I'm coming along to your Women for Independence meeting."
Wow. So,
is what it's all about. If you touch one person.
Exactly.
You're just sowing wee seeds, aren't you? Like.
We're talking in the break there, Fiona. You were talking about poetry.
We've two projects that we're sort of mulling over. There's so many poets around, and there's something about the independence movement that is so creative. And whether it's Yes Stones, there's indie poet, there's music, you know, it just, you don't see that on the other side at all. So what we were wondering in terms of content for Indie Live Radio, what about a poetry corner? And gets maybe once a week, we'll record somebody reciting their own poems or get other people to recite them, and then you've got, you know, a poem a week or something, you could put it out on the podcast.
That's a great idea.
I put a wee post up on our Facebook page just saying, would anybody be interested? Wham! You know, suddenly got poets signed up. I'm going to go and see one next week. There's people offering to read things as well.
So I think that's a great idea.
And I mean, they're not long poems, yeah. But say we could easily record a dozen and at one a week. That's you with 6 months.
Are you
months worth
you're
of
pals
content.
With a Paul, aren't you, Paul Colvin? Do you not know him or a Indie poet
through Lorraine, who's another one of the women for Indie, but she's pals with him. She signed him up to do it already.
I knew he had a link with Clacks.
And then the other thing we were mulling over, because all the leaflets and everything that they're created by the S groups, they're doing it themselves. You don't have the sort of, and here's a Braille version, and here's a version in, you know, all the other things as you'd get with an official leaflet. And what we thought was actually some people can take information in as easily by listening to it as they can at reading it. And there's a lot of people out there who've got maybe partial sighted or, and actually, why not do audio versions of leaflets? And you could be broadcasting that.
We create little indie clips, right?
Yeah.
Of, you know, kind of people talking. Also, Vox Pop Scott, right? And they're on Twitter, Vox Pop Scott. And they do some really interesting stuff. Oh, God, you've now got me going, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I'm just thinking there, Fiona, as you were speaking about that and the audio versions, maybe we could do them for other nationalities, other European languages. Like, we
great
have a big
idea.
Polish contingent. Uh-huh. Chinese people who, I mean, I've spoken to a couple of Chinese people within a couple of projects I'm involved with, and they feel the younger people from the Chinese of ethnicities in, say, Glasgow, feel that Scottish politics is not something they want to become involved in, and they're trying to get their younger sort of members of the family not to be involved. But we're trying to say, you're women, you're living in Scotland, you're one of us.
Absolutely.
And so maybe if it was like some of our information was translated into Mandarin.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. But I think that's a really good idea. So you're going to like get translations done.
Well, that's an idea that is you've just watched being born right there.
Okay, that's
but,
just.
But you know, it's a great idea, and we've got somebody in our Women for Indie group who's a French national, and she's involved in the 3 Million project. So you could probably get all the European languages quite easily. So given that recording is so simple, I think we'll just have a go at it. Let you see what you think, and then if you can use it on the radio, that's brilliant.
Okay.
And if you,
I think that's a great idea.
We can try it.
Has anybody seen the film Vice about Dick Cheney and where he came from, the VP in the States? And there was a little bit in the beginning of the film which is talking about people are really struggling, they're hurting in America when he was coming through, and they don't want to go out and vote. They want to escape some of the harsh realities of American politics at the time. I think, to me, that was like the flip side of what we're doing. We're actually going above and beyond ourselves because we feel so animated and energetic and enthusiastic about our future. And we know it's up to us as grassroots people to make the change happen. So we will knock on doors. We will get cold. And I think we're doing something that's unique. It will put aside some of these negative thoughts. That's all we can do is speak to our neighbours and our friends and our family. It's being positive and giving folk hope. They can trust in the future because it's their future.
Anybody who saw the Leslie Riddick and Phantom Power series of nation films, which covered the Faroes, Iceland and Norway, you would have been struck by the beautiful cinematography as well as the sheer novelty of quality documentary coming from an independent Scotland perspective. Well, I was lucky enough to be at the premiere of the latest Phantom Power film, which is hopefully the first of a series, and this is about Scotland's future. This first film is looking at Scotland in the EU and is shot largely in Brussels, speaking to a whole range of people. It was an absolutely wonderful film, thoroughly enjoyed it. And following the performance, there was a discussion with a panel of experts, including Kirsty Hughes, who's the director of the Scottish Centre for European Relations. And she had some very interesting things to say about Scotland returning to the EU once we're independent. So here's Kirsty.
Thank you very much, and what a brilliant film. Thank you for showing us that and doing that. There was so much in it, and so much to comment on. But I've been particularly asked to pick up on the question of an independent Scotland joining the EU and how that might happen, and whether it can happen, or what blocks of the road there might be. But I wasn't intending to give a plug for another of our publications that I did pay for on that last week, but we produced a report in May on the future of Europe and Scotland's contribution to and participation in the future of Europe, and it was just one of the last commentators you were interviewing there talked about the global issues and staying part of Europe and global discussion, and I think that's what we tried to do in our report with 20 authors across 17 issues, so that's on our website if you're interested in that. But coming back to the question of Scotland and Europe, I actually wanted to go back 30 years briefly. 30 years ago I was lucky enough, and quite by chance really, to be living in Berlin. I arrived in Berlin in September 1989, so I was there when the wall came down, and I followed that extraordinary process, went to the then Czechoslovakia, and Poland, and Hungary, and, you know, it was incredibly exciting to be part of that historical moment. And professionally, I then followed a lot of that through the 1990s, and I particularly followed the process by which those countries from Central and Eastern Europe joined the European Union eventually in 2004. And okay, at first glance, that may not be the most inspiring example for Scotland, because you think, oh my goodness, it took almost 15 years from 1989 to 2004. But first of all, they did it, and they came, you know, from all sorts of backgrounds, some from within the Soviet Union, from within the former Yugoslavia, from the Soviet bloc, obviously Czechoslovakia became two independent countries in the process, and they all wanted to join the European Union. There were some differing views in the 90s about NATO, but they all saw that group of countries as their political home. And I think also when you look at what happened then, when, you know, when you hear people telling you that Scotland either couldn't join the European Union or take a very long time, well, those countries, as you know, they didn't start off as Western-style democracies or market economies, but they, when they finally got allowed to start membership talks, and the advanced group started in 1998, and the slightly deemed to be lagging group was allowed to start 2 years later in 2000, and they'd all finished those talks by 2002, so one lot took 4 years, the advance guard, funnily enough, took four, and the laggards took two, and then there was 2 years for ratification. And then they were in. So is there any reason why it should take longer for Scotland? I think not, and on the contrary, obviously, Scotland at the moment is already in the European Union. We still don't know. It's been one of the extraordinary and defining characteristics of Brexit, the uncertainty of Brexit. You know, we still don't know if it's going to happen. Let's hope it may not. You know, we may yet not have a Johnson majority, but instead have some sort of government, cross-party government, maybe a minority Labour government, another vote, and a chance to remain. But we don't know, and even if it's a Johnson government, we leave by the 31st of January, and he does his kind of mini basic free trade deal by next December, which a lot of people think can't even be done. But even if he did that, that wouldn't give Scotland certainty if it's going independent about the relationship with England and the rest of the UK in the future, because you might then, a few years later, after the damage Brexit would be doing, you might have another Labour government or a Labour-Lib government. Who knows? And maybe they'll take England back into the customs union. So, you know, I think 2 or 3 years ago there was a wish to see how Brexit turned out, because that, you know, that was going to affect Scotland's future, independent or not. And now it seems to me that uncertainty is going to stay unless the UK comes to its senses, or England and Wales come to their senses and change their minds. So let me just say a couple more things about the accession process. I'm not going to stand here and tell you it's 100% certain that an independent Scotland can join the European Union. But I'd be very surprised if it couldn't. I would sort of expect it to be 96, 97% certain, let's say. Obviously, it depends on the sequence of events, but assuming Scotland basically still meets all the single market rules and regulations, assuming it's only just left the customs union, then yes, it's an independent state. There's all sorts of things, laws and regulatory structures and trade bodies and foreign ministries that will have to be established. But actually, there's no reason why Scotland couldn't be much more like the so-called EFTA countries, Finland, Sweden and Austria, when they joined back in 1994. They basically took 2 years to get through the whole process. Now, the fact that the EU has expanded has had one consequence, which means whether it's an accession treaty or a trade treaty, it takes longer to ratify these things. But obviously, Scotland would, unless we're talking sort of 20 years hence after a sort of extreme Brexit, Scotland would still, in regulatory terms, be very close to the EU. And there were some encouraging interviews in that film. What I've done in the last, let's say, 2 or 3 years, when I've been talking to people in different places in Europe, Brussels or Berlin or Paris, about other topics that I've been working on, I've tended to just drop the question in at the end of my discussion and say, if Scotland became independent, you know, could it join or would it be straightforward? And the response I've got again and again is, yes, it's not. Basically, it's not a big deal. And, you know, I think for two reasons it's not a big deal. And a lot of people think the UK disintegrating, if you like, is a big deal. So, but it's not a big deal because Scotland would be an advanced economy and democracy already being in the EU. And also, it's not the size of the UK, and it's not the size of Turkey. And I think the EU is much easier about small and medium-sized countries than it is about larger ones, to be honest, because it affects the balance of power. And the EU is a political body, and it's, you know, let's not be naive about it. I probably said more than enough. Let me just throw one thing in at the end here. We saw recently President Macron vetoed opening accession talks with North Macedonia and Albania to considerable sort of outrage across both the European Commission and most other member states. This was a series of promises that had been made to those countries and also a very sensitive area geopolitically. Unfortunately, it shows that the path to accession is not always straightforward. You know, stuff can intervene, and in that particular case, I did actually ask a very senior former French diplomat what he thought that was about by email, and he said to me, he said, "Kirsty, this isn't something new. This is typical French ambivalence for the last 30 years about enlargement, because France has always been very keen to have a political and a powerful Europe, as you see Macron talking about again and again at the moment. And so, yet again, we see a French unease, which frankly we saw with the Central and East Europeans. I wrote about it in the 1990s. France didn't veto that enlargement in the end. But it can, you know, it can come in, it can slow things down. I'm not saying that's what would happen in the case of Scotland, and there's lots of diplomatic and political work to be done and is being done. There's a new Scottish government hub in Paris, that old alliance, and so on. So I think I'm coming to a conclusion now that my basic message is, yes, of course Scotland can join the EU. It's a European country, it will meet the criteria. We can sit here and debate particular things I've niggled away at, like currency issues. But in principle, it will be a straightforward accession. It will face less hiccups, and it will take less long than Poland or the Czech Republic, let alone Macedonia or Albania. And as someone also said in the film, the EU isn't perfect, but it looks like the best way of cooperating that we can imagine at the moment. Thank you very much.
And just when we thought our week couldn't get any more exciting, I had tweeted Phantom Power following the film that we watched just to say what I thought it was a great film. And I got a message back from Phantom Power asking if we would be interested in helping out with a viral video campaign that they're wanting to get going. So the following day, a group of willing volunteers were assembled, and here's what happened. What's your objective in this?
So the objective of this little, it's like a wee micro video campaign for social media, is the real objective is for this upcoming election to get as many people out to vote and to register as possible. In 2017, we saw what can happen when you stay at home or you just don't get off your backside and get out there to the local poll station and get that X in the box, because it can make all the difference. And this election is absolutely vital. We need to get Scotland's voice heard emphatically. So please, people, get out there. And I hope this campaign helps, does some, in some small way, to achieve that.
Well, this is very exciting, isn't it? Because we're standing with, about to be filmed by Phantom Power Films, to be part of a viral campaign to get people out there to vote. So, have you done anything like this before?
Nope, absolutely not. This will be a first time for me.
It will be a first. It doesn't sound as if we have to do anything too tricky, though. Just stand there and be filmed.
Yeah, not quite the first, because I was interviewed at Indy Ref 1, Polish television. What happened to the recording? I have no idea.
Have you done anything like this before?
No.
You're a secret film star?
I would not be doing anything like this before if it wasn't for something I really absolutely felt I had to make a stand about. Not just for me, but for my friends, my kids, yeah. And for myself. You know, give myself a bit of self-respect and say, yes, stand up for...
Exactly, and that's probably why we're all here. It's because it becomes very personal, doesn't it, when you see what's facing us.
And what's the alternative? I mean, we all have different ideas about what the future of independent Scotland would actually look like, but the actual starting point has to be a choice to become independent. So at the moment, with that hampering us going forward, you know, the alternative is Brexit Britain.
If we were in England right now, who would you vote for? You've got just two terrible choices.
No, I'm a pal's
three if you include Joan Swinson.
Yeah, my pals down south, so, you know, when they knew I was back up here, that was kind of, well, at least, you know, you've got an idea about what you're voting for. We're astute.
Yeah, but at least we've got actual choices. Whichever way they go, I imagine they're still heading for Brexit down the road. Yeah. It's just about whether we're dragged down with them.
I think somebody referred to it as, you know, which tank of man-eating piranha are you actually going to dive into? It shouldn't be like that. You know, it's 2019. We shouldn't have to have that kind of choice. And we shouldn't have to have that kind of choice with the kind of economies that we have, you know?
If you have to lie in order to persuade people of your idea, there is something wrong with your idea.
Fundamentally, you know? Yes. And morally.
And whether that's the Brexit vote or the Indy Ref 1,
I'm very surprised that with all the legal aspects of Brexit and Indy Ref 1, that we're not negating the vote and starting again.
Yeah.
Because they were illegal.
If it was any other vote where it was found to be rigged to that degree, you would run it again. Right, so that was great fun. We've just done our photo shoot for the campaign for Phantom Power, the legendary Phantom Power. How did that go?
It was wonderful. The amount of talent that's in the Clackmannanshire area is really amazing.
We're talented,
really amazing.
At scowling on camera. We're pretty good at that.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're all beautiful people. Beautiful yes people.
When's your new film going to be out? Because the premiere was fantastic.
Yeah, what we're doing is we're going to tour. We're doing Glasgow next. I've got some really interesting speakers for that. And then we're going to take it nationwide. And then we've been asked to go to London and Brussels.
Wow.
To screen it as well, so that'll be really valuable to share, you know, what's really going on in Scotland with their friends and neighbours.
Definitely, and you could get Indie Live to live stream it as well, and that way a wider
Absolutely.
Audience could see it.
Yeah.
Because the panel added a lot, I thought, to the discussion. It was really good having a panel discussion.
Yeah.
So if they're up for that, I'm
Absolutely.
Sure Indie Live
love
would
that.
Jump at
love
the chance.
The Indie Live guys are amazing, and it's great. We're so lucky to have our new media, new Scottish media. It's made such a difference.
Yeah.
So more power to them. Yeah, we'll definitely hook up.
Brilliant. Right, well, we're all part of that, so good luck. More power to you.
So
look
much.
Forward to seeing it.
Excellent.
So how did you like that? How did you like getting your filming
That was
done?
Such good fun of them.
We've been at Media Stars a lot, haven't we, with our photos on
Yes.
and now this part of a campaign.
The sun was a bit bright and shiny, but as I was to be quite It added to my mood, I felt.
Yeah, you have to suffer for your art.
You have to suffer for your art, yes.
Yes. Yeah, see, I thought you pulled off the disdainful, disappointed...
See, I thought you pulled off your annoyance look better.
Maybe we just really practised in these emotions.
Maybe, yes. Being a mother, certainly.
Yes,
I've had
that would
plenty of annoyance in that. Definitely helped me today.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. What a week for us. That's it for this week, though, and we'll see you all next time. Bye.